You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer-powered.
Listener-supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community. And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, March 20, 2019.
I believe what the supermajority and the governor have in mind is that this is an opportunity to advance turning our public schools over to businesses.
The Indiana State Legislature approved a bill moving up the time in which the state superintendent of education would become an appointed rather than an elected position. In today's feature report, WFHB's Rasha Kamhawi speaks with Monroe County Senator Mark Stoops about House Bill 1005.
Also coming up in the next half hour, two local scams to watch out for. On a new edition of our Consumer Watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
Monroe County will receive $7 million in unexpected road funding from the Indiana Department of Transportation. Public Works and Highway Director Lisa Ridge told county commissioners this morning the funding will help her expedite two existing county road projects.
Sample Road Phase 2 was awarded a little over $4,075,600 for phase two of the project, but it's all going to be built actually in 2021 with phase one. So we thought we were going to have to hold off on that project until 2024. So NDOT asked us if we needed some money, so we said yes. and then also we were also awarded on Friday Hunters Creek Road Phase 3. And also 2021.
In other business, commissioners approved a $21,000 agreement for an education program for expelled youth. Chief Probation Officer Troy Hatfield said the effort supports keeping youth expelled from school in the community instead of being sent away to detention elsewhere.
And what it does, we'll have an agreement with Adult Basic Education and MCCSC to help provide education, career, and life skills training to at-risk youth. And these youth may not be successful in traditional settings.
The program will take place at the Broadview Learning Center, where a licensed educator will provide instruction 4 days a week for 3 hours a day. Hatfield said the program is funded with monies from a juvenile detention alternative grant. Commissioner Lee Jones expressed concern about how the kids would get to the program.
And how do the ones who are at home get there?
We have bus passes that we can give through our day reporting, day treatment program. We provide transportation there. So we do everything we can to try to reduce that barrier of transportation and make sure that they're in programming.
Commissioner Amanda Barge expressed concern to Hatfield about whether the program reached minorities. She said, statistically, people of color are disciplined disproportionately.
We do have, through our JDI process, we have a local committee that's getting ready to start regarding race, ethnicity, and inclusion. And we're looking for volunteers that could serve on that committee. We're hopefully would have people that have some expertise in the area in terms of serving a population. And to make sure that we are not overly responsive in terms of being disproportionate in any way with youth of color.
In other business, commissioners also approved a $1,400 contract with Integrity One Technologies to digitize unique county survey documents. The contract is part of an archiving and data management project by Monroe County Surveyor Tron Enright Randolph.
The City of Bloomington Utilities Department is battling disinfectant byproducts, or DBPs, earlier in the year than usual. These DBPs are typically a warm weather concern, but Utilities Director Vic Kelson says a wet winter has contributed to the formation of precursors to haloacetic acids in Bloomington's water source, Lake Monroe. Kelson explained the situation to the Utilities Service Board on Monday, saying, quote, It's been a difficult winter.
Highly intense rains. There have been a lot of erosion. Mm-hmm. It's also there have also been a lot of major wind events. Mm-hmm. And the lake has been generally warmer through the winter than it normally is. So the lake has been probably mixing frequently, mm-hmm. Which normally doesn't happen that much this time of year. And, you know, the lake is, we all know it's really high, but it's also chemically challenging because rainwater doesn't have very much alkalinity or any calcium at all. So we don't have as much buffering capacity as we normally have for pH. So
Kelson said the conditions at Lake Monroe have led to contaminant levels that are more than 5 times higher than normal.
There's a measure of the humic acids that that lead to the formation of the haloacetic acids have been higher than we've ever seen for months at a time now. Normally, the reading for this is it's a attenuation of UV ultraviolet radiation at a particular wavelength is the measurement. Normally, that runs about 0.07. Lately, it's been in excess of 0.3 or almost up to 0.5. It's been very high. What that means is that there's a lot more of the precursors for making those haloacetic acids, which are the disinfection byproduct that we've had the most trouble with.
The haloacetic acids Kelson referred to produce disinfectant byproducts in two ways. First, by reacting with organic matter in the source water. Second, they react with the chlorine used to treat water to make it safe to drink. Soil and rock filter haloacetic acids from water naturally. But that filtering process doesn't occur with surface water sources like lakes and reservoirs. Kelson told the board, the Monroe treatment plant staff has been vigilant about removing organic contaminants, and their work has paid off. Kelson told the board, recent water tests indicate DBP levels well below EPA limits.
CBU is implementing a new stormwater grant program. CBU is allotting $35,000 for small grants to support green storm water infrastructure projects on private property. Utilities Director Vic Kelson introduced the program in a public information meeting on Monday.
Our lawyer is fond of saying that stormwater is a common enemy that we all face, and it definitely is a problem that everybody has some issues with. So we've established this program this year to help members of the community do projects that can help them with their own yards and also help their neighborhoods.
The grants are part of a cost share program. According to grant materials, applicants will be responsible for any project costs not covered by a CBU stormwater grant. MS4 coordinator Kelsey Fatonia said since this first year's pot of money is small, there are limits to who can apply for the grants.
This year, we're limiting it to single-family residential homes, and an individual can apply. If your project only impacts your property, then you can apply as an individual. If you have a project that impacts multiple homeowners across adjacent properties, then we're asking for you to apply as a group. So get your neighbor's support, and you can apply together. Or you can also go through your neighborhood association or a homeowner association.
Bretonia gave a list of examples to consider, including creating rain gardens or bioswales.
If you have any ditches that are privately owned as well, detention pond maintenance, any driveway culvert replacements. So a lot of the driveway culverts that you see on the roads are the responsibility of the homeowners, even if it's adjacent to a publicly managed ditch. Downspout disconnection, so maybe you have a feeling your downspouts are connected to our sanitary sewer, which they're not supposed to be. So if you want to disconnect that, get all the rainwater from your gutters going into a bioswale or something, that would be an awesome project.
Bretonia said these projects will not entirely fix neighborhood drainage problems, but she said addressing runoff issues on private property contributes to CBU's ability to manage stormwater issues that come in large rain events. She also emphasized the importance of controlling contaminants in storm water runoff.
The storm sewer infrastructure does not go to a treatment plant, so anything that goes into your storm drains goes directly to our local creeks.
CBU is moving quickly with the program and is asking applicants to submit a letter of intent by April 1st. Fratonia said she will work with residents on their actual applications, which are due by May 1st. The application must include a detailed sketch of the proposed project and a cost estimate.
So I recommend contacting a local contractor, landscape company, someone who you'd like to work with on this project to hire out and get just a general cost estimate. Some companies will do that for free.
CBU would also like applicants to include a five-year maintenance plan. Bretonia said projects will be selected and the grants awarded sometime this summer. She added that projects will be reviewed for more than just feasibility. The Stormwater Grant Program is only available to residents of the City of Bloomington. Applications can be found at bloomington.in.gov/utilities.
Indiana Disciplinary Commission filed a complaint Tuesday against Indiana Attorney General Curtis Hill after four women accused him of sexual assault. WFHB correspondent Cade Young brings us that report.
Indiana Attorney General Curtis Hill could lose his law license due to alleged sexual misconduct against three legislative staffers and a state representative. The four women came forward last year, claiming the state's highest-ranking law enforcement official groped them at a legislative party in March of 2018. Attorney General Curtis Hill has refuted the claims and refused to step down despite calls for his resignation from fellow Republicans, including Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb. The Indiana Disciplinary Commission under the Indiana Supreme Court filed a disciplinary complaint yesterday that alleges Hill engaged in acts of battery or sexual battery. The commission accused Attorney General Hill of a, quote, pattern of abuse after the four women accused him of inappropriately touching them at an Indianapolis bar during the end of session or signe die party. In filing that complaint, the disciplinary commission says Hill violated the Indiana Rules of Professional Conduct. Hill will have an opportunity to defend himself and his law license to the Indiana Supreme Court. The result is hard to predict. The Indy Star reports Hill may face a range of outcomes, such as a public reprimand or disbarment. The disciplinary commission states in its complaint that it has reasonable cause to believe the complaints against Hill. The commission states that if sexual battery and battery allegations are proved, they would take disciplinary action. The disciplinary commission consists of 9 members appointed by the Indiana Supreme Court. Their job is to investigate and prosecute claims of misconduct against lawyers licensed to practice law in Indiana. The commission also protects lawyers against unwarranted claims of misconduct. The commission lists the facts of Hill's case in an online document which is available to the public on the disciplinary commission's website. The complaint goes on to list all of the accusers and why they believe Hill's actions constitute as battery and sexual battery. Despite calling on the attorney general to resign, the Republican-dominated legislature has resisted calls to impeach Hill. Hill is a former Elkhart County prosecutor and a graduate of Indiana University's law school. He has called the allegations vicious and false. Both a state ethics probe and a criminal investigation have failed to produce any formal charges against Hill, but he could face a possible private lawsuit. It's not clear whether the disciplinary commission's finding will remove Hill from office. Disbarment or the removal of the state's license to practice law in Indiana would not necessarily disqualify Hill from the attorney general's office. In nearly all United States jurisdictions, the attorney general is the chief law enforcement officer. As such, an attorney general may also be considered a police rank. Reporting for WFHB, I'm Cade Young.
Support for WFHB comes from Cardinal Spirits Distillery, located on the Beeline. Cardinal Spirits has opened a new kitchen featuring local seasonal foods made from scratch to complement their craft cocktails. Dinner is available Tuesday through Saturday at Cardinal Spirits, 922 South Morton Street. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. The state legislature made the state superintendent of public instruction an appointed rather than voted in position yesterday. As WFHB correspondent Rasha Kamhawi reports, the Senate confirmed House Bill 1005 yesterday afternoon.
Starting as early as 2021, the position of State Superintendent of Public Instruction will no longer be elected by Hoosier voters. The Republican-controlled Senate voted 29-19 yesterday to eliminate the elected position and make the state's highest educator an appointed Secretary of Education. House Bill 1005 was originally approved late last year by the Indiana General Assembly. The switch from an elected to an appointed position was planned to happen in 6 years, in 2025. The date was moved up from 2025 to 2021 after the current state superintendent, Jennifer McCormick, announced late last year she would not seek a second term next year. Mark Stoops is a Democratic state senator whose district includes Monroe County. Stoops is also a member of the Senate Education Committee. He says the switch will no longer require school teaching experience as a prerequisite for the state's highest-ranking educator. He expressed concern that the governor's appointed person may be more focused on business than on education.
The concern is that person is going to be a business person because the Republicans are pushing to make this a business. The fact that now it's in a disappointed position and that the legislature has this chance to make sure that whoever the governor appoints has the experience in public education that would allow them to make the best decisions in regards to public education. But I believe what the supermajority and the governor have in mind is that this is an opportunity to advance turning our public schools or turning our public schools over to businesses, which is very similar to what they would call school choice or school reform. And that's when the vouchers were created, which have moved so far about $150 million just into private schools. And this is something that I think the Republicans have been moving towards nationwide. Indiana is at the forefront with the supermajority. They've been very successful at transferring public dollars into private business hands.
The new governor-appointed Secretary of Education will be in charge of running a $6 billion state agency overseeing education for kindergarten through 12th grade students. Stoops says the original measure, which passed the legislature in 2017, was a Republican response to a Democrat, Glenda Ritz, holding the state superintendent's office for the first time in 40 years.
We had a superintendent of public instruction that was a Democrat, and she actually won more votes than the governor, Governor Pence, at the time in that election. And she was very adamant in her support of public schools and her opposition to expanding the voucher program. There were strong disagreements. The State Board of Education, which was appointed positions by the governor, so that time Governor Pence, and some carrying over from Governor Daniels, that were continuing to put the emphasis on shifting money to these private, mostly religious schools. About 95% of the schools that get vouchers are religious schools, and they don't really have the same requirements that public schools do, including on who they have to admit. So when it came to 2016, the McCormick won for superintendent of public instruction. And at that time, the Republicans thought, okay, well, we have somebody that's a little more malleable to our grand scheme. And that turned out not to be the case. As a matter of fact, she's proven to be very ethical and again, very committed to public schools.
Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb has encouraged the state's legislature to consider increases to teacher salaries. The average teacher salary in Indiana is lower than any surrounding states. That bill is currently being considered in the legislature, which would adopt it into the state budget. The current budgetary, or long legislative session, is about halfway over. House Bill 1005 passed on the state Senate floor yesterday after 2 p.m. The bill will now go to Governor Holcomb's desk to be signed into law later this or next week. For WFHB, I'm Rasha Kamhawi.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4100. 4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
No, that's not your phone. It's me, reminding you to watch out for a bunch of telephone scams that are going around right now. One bunch of swindlers are claiming to be FBI agents. They've been calling Hoosiers and telling them some outrageous lies, like, for instance, that you've been caught having illegal telephone conversations with children, and offer to let you off the hook on a felony rap if you'll pay a so-called fine with a prepaid gift card. The thing is, the bad guys can spoof your caller ID and make it appear the call is coming from any number they like. The fake FBI agents have been using a number that belongs to some poor guy in Texas. And even if the call looks like it's coming from the FBI or some other government office, don't answer. Let it go to voicemail. If you think it might be real, call the agency that supposedly called you using a number you found in a phone book or online. And there's another nasty bunch out there calling people all over the country and right here in our area, pretending to be agents of the Internal Revenue Service, or here in Indiana, our State Department of Revenue. These fake revenueers tell you that you owe money, and if you don't cough up right now, you'll be arrested and thrown in jail. It's all nonsense. If you actually do owe some taxes, the real tax collectors will send you letters in the mail and will never, ever call you and threaten you with arrest. And only crooks want money so fast you have to send it by wire or purchase a prepaid gift card. One variation on this theme takes the opposite tack. The caller says you're due for an extra refund and wants your personal ID and bank account info. Once again, the real tax people always send you letters in the mail. Tax-related scams are running wild just now, with April 15th looming on the horizon. And it's not only telephone swindles. There are crooks posing as accountants and tax preparers. Some of them are known as ghost preparers because they don't even have the special ID required by the IRS. And even some of those companies that do have a preparer tax identification number will pull stunts like charging you double what they estimated or promising you a much bigger refund and then falsifying your papers, making you commit a crime when you send them in. If you can't do your own taxes, and I can't, beware of anyone who wants cash up front or who has the refund sent to them instead of to you. Go to a local tax preparer, somebody that's been around for a while. As always, the best way to find one is ask your friends. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at wfhb.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@wfhb.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Cade Young, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Rasha Kamhawi.
Our engineer today, Kevin Oliver. Our theme music provided by Ben Lumsdaine, Danny Graff, and Scott Schmadeke. Executive producer, Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org. Stay tuned now for the Hijabi Diaries, a series examining the experiences and issues facing Muslim women in Monroe County and beyond. The Hijabi Diaries are coming up next right here on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcast of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.